drawing from newly released intelligence, Trump laid bare how Beijing exploited vulnerabilities in our election infrastructure through hacking, data theft, and coordinated influence operations.
Documents show that during this period, dozens of significant CIA and NSA reports about China's election targeting were kept out of the presidential briefing. These were briefings I would get almost every day. Everything was kept out that was of importance. One email among intelligence analysts admitted that they had, quote, deliberately massaged the presidential daily briefing to withhold information regarding Chinese activities related to the election. Another official inside the FBI wrote that she was running, quote, a shadow government, unquote, to keep intelligence about China's election meddling from becoming known and to keep it away from the honorable press.
And what's interesting is the left saying, well, we were actually in control of those agencies at the time. But the problem we always have with the deep state, which is exactly what it is that when you come in and have politicals in charge, you have people who are career bureaucrats underneath who really cause, they have a lot of power to keep things from you and to do things they shouldn't do.
He connected the dots to the engineered chaos of 2020, where a virus from China conveniently locked down the country, eroded election integrity, and paved the way for stolen data to install a compliant puppet regime.
We also received testimony from multiple intelligence community whistleblowers who reported retaliation for challenging the intelligence community's manipulation of intelligence on the virus's origins. Once again, revealing a clear pattern of suppressing dissent, silencing critics, and burying the truth.
NSA analysts openly admitted chopping up assessments and downgrading intelligence to bury links between Beijing's activities and the 2020 contest, even as the FBI under Director Wray drew an absolute red line against including dissenting views that China had indeed meddled.
And this was, Katie, like a massive effort, what they call a multi-domain operation. That means trade, it means diplomacy, it means open source information, it means social media. So all the levers of power China had to influence the U.S. election. So there was clear evidence of political and personal bias, and intelligence is supposed to be neutral. So what we heard tonight from the president is an allegation that this intelligence was suppressed in order to harm him, and now we're seeing documents already which back up those claims.
The other thing that we blocked yesterday was the SAVE Act, right? Which was administration to rig our democracy so that it would be hard for any Democrat in any state to win any election.
There you have Senator Alyssa Slotkin, nominally from Michigan, but really channeling her CIA training, admitting that her party can't win if the U.S. adopts the kind of voter identification laws that most of the other civilized nations in the world use.
We know that the Justice Department's compromised. We know they don't prosecute the Epstein stuff. We know that the Trump administration is deep in the swamp. But on the issue of the 2020 election being stolen, the evidence is overwhelming. And China, working with the CIA and others, that's in the emails that have been released. We knew it back at the time. The FBI, the CIA, NSA, they all sat there and said, we're going to cover this up. We're going to block this. We're not going to let the public or Trump or anybody know. They knew before the election, during and after what happened. So it's about our right to vote. It's about the coup over this country.
Burn bags stuffed with damning 2020 fraud evidence hidden in safes and obscure offices point straight back to directives from the Obama administration, with figures like Brennan and Clapper orchestrating the suppression.
Barack Obama can now be summoned before a grand jury. He cannot take the Fifth Amendment because he has immunity from prosecution. He'll have to tell the truth. If he lies as a private citizen about what he did as president, he'll no longer have that immunity. And that is a trap that Obama is sitting potentially facing.
This wasn't incompetence, and it wasn't organic. It was a coordinated effort to protect a foreign adversary's gains while gaslighting the American people about the most secure election in history. John Bowne reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
This shower filter slays 95% of the lead, 99% of the chlorine, and keeps that damn atrazine out of your water. Protect yourself. Don't let them turn you gay. Purify it now.
Mother, do you really want to shower with me? Do you want to clean everything? Oh, mother!
I'm not gay. You are.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Well, this is exactly the type of thing that you want to be wrong about, right? When you make grave predictions, you hope that you're proven wrong, and you hope that the utopians, the people that kind of live in this dream fantasy world, you want them to be right. Because, hey, if it's over in 24 hours and it's this great military victory, even though I'm morally opposed to it because I'm very anti-war, you could see large aspects of the American populace supporting it purely from, you know, a resource-based calculation. However, it was very clear since even before the beginning of this whole retarded escapade, this would not work because we've done this multiple times over decades and decades and decades. And we've got somebody joining us very shortly, having some minor technical issues. It is what it is on our end. It's our fault, I think. Joe Kent will be joining me in under 5 minutes, probably, to talk about all this stuff and more. It's absolutely not our fault. All right, that's what Matt says. All right, but we're going to go ahead and get into it now. Let's just go ahead and roll this Daniel Davis deep dive clip. If we can go ahead and do that, that should be in the Kent section. I'll go ahead and get my bearings here a little bit, be honest with you guys. Let's go ahead and play that one, and that is clip number 25.
The Pentagon leaders, the uniforms, the secretary, they're all, the president of the United States are mocking us. They're mocking us who wanted to do the right things for the right reasons in the right way. To only use military force when it was necessary for our national defense. And then we sought to defend the defenseless. We wanted to elevate and help out those who were too powerless to do anything else, to stand against tyranny and all that kind of stuff. Remember those things we used to say? A force for good. You remember that used to be the motto of the Navy, a force for good. And now look at us. Now we're an instrument of violence. Against and using it to kick little guys.
Yep.
The very people we used to want to lift up and to raise up and to help. Now we're kicking them.
Yep.
And we're throwing mud and dirt in the face of people like me who are still in the service. There's millions, hundreds of thousands, I'm sure, of people who are still.
I'm pretty sure he's crying. And I don't want to attribute something to the man that he's not doing here. Don't mute it. Just pause it. It's making a mockery of our armed forces, making a mockery of the name of the U.S. And I agree. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. This is Daniel saying this. I don't know what we can do about this right now, but at the very least I can do is make these types of videos so you're aware of the grotesque double standard, the hypocrisy, correct, and the absolute amorality of what our senior leaders are doing. And all right, add the audio again.
Sure, I'm even wearing it right now. I proudly wear this flag. I've loved this country. I've loved what it stands for. I love the people of it. I put my life on the line through 4 combat deployments. Wouldn't hesitate to do it again if it was necessary for our security. But I will be damned if I'm going to give even verbal consent or even passive support to what we're doing now.
That's the
key.
It
is un-American.
Yes.
It is illegal. It is unethical. It is immoral.
Yes.
What they're doing to our country. And more people need to stand up and make their voice heard as well.
Yeah, we're literally being raped right now. Like, this is rape. They're killing our sons and daughters to build a third temple and establish a new colonial empire in the 21st century. That's called Greater Israel, not Iran. So, I wanted to wait until he was on to do this, but I'm not going to wait. I'm going to go ahead and do it. I want to read the letter. I want to read his resignation letter, and I'm going to ask him about portions of it, because like I said at the beginning of the segment, at the beginning of the hour, this is like the most painful stuff in the world to be vindicated on. Now, keep in mind, Joe was, I believe, the eighth director of the National Counterterrorism Center, which I believe is like, he was like the number two under Tulsi, I believe, or something to the equivalent. I'm going to go ahead and read this. And it's just pretty shocking how right he was about everything. President Trump, this is Joe Kent saying this, after much reflection, I have decided to resign from my position as director of the National Counterterrorism Center effective today. I cannot in good conscience support the ongoing war in Iran. Iran posed no imminent threat to our nation, and it is clear that we started this war due to pressure from Israel and its powerful American lobby. Well, everyone knows that to be true, even more so proven to be vindicated now. I support the values and the foreign policies that you campaigned on. I think that we all did. That's why I voted for him. That's why I pulled the cross out of my shirt the day that he was the assassination attempt happened and told people to vote for him. How stupid I feel now. On in 2016, 2020, 2024, when you enacted which you enacted in your first term. Until June of 2025, you understood that the wars in the Middle East were a trap that robbed America of the precious lives of our patriots and depleted the wealth and prosperity of our nation. I will point out that in October of 2025, he did the Middle East Peace Summit, the like gala bonanza thing, and literally said to MBS, as MBS is like holding his heart or whatever, no more neocon wars in the Middle East. And now we are where we are. I'm going to keep reading it. In your first administration, you understood better than any modern president how to decisively apply military power without getting us drawn into never-ending wars. You demonstrated this by killing Soleimani and by defeating ISIS. Now, we can talk about that for sure. Early in this administration, high-ranking Israeli officials and the influential members of the American media deployed a misinformation campaign that wholly undermined your America First platform and sowed pro-war sentiments to encourage a war with Iran. Exactly. Those aren't your constituents. Your constituents are us, the American people. And you rejected us for people that live thousands of miles away. And you wonder why we're insulted? Seriously. This echo chamber was used to deceive you into believing that Iran posed an imminent threat to the United States and that should you strike now, there was a clear path to a swift victory. All the actuaries, all the projections, everyone with knowledge said there wasn't a path. But he was told by people that had a vested interest in us going to war for other reasons that there was. And look where we are. This was a lie and is the same tactic the Israelis used to draw us into the disastrous Iraq war that cost our nation the lives of thousands of our best men and women. We cannot make this mistake again. And I got Joe joining me now. I want to go ahead and throw you up here as I read the last of this. Hope you don't mind. How are you doing?
Well, man, how are you?
I'm all right. You know, I wish we had good news to discuss, you know, one of these days. It's just, another disappointment, another tragedy. But I'm going to keep reading this because I think it's important for people to understand. And what I kind of intro'd the hour with, I'm not sure if you were watching, was when we talk about this stuff or when you specifically talk about this stuff as somebody with the experience, it's the most painful thing in the world to be vindicated, right? Like, it's a thing almost that we don't want. The people that live in the delusional, like, Narnia fantasy land, you know, it'd be real nice if we won in 24 hours. But of course, that was never possible, right? So I want to keep reading this. I just, to give the framework and the perspective to people, and this is you saying this, of course, not me, 23-year-old. As a veteran who deployed to combat 11 times, as a Gold Star husband who lost my beloved wife, Shannon, in a war manufactured by Israel, that's very strong language, I cannot support sending the next generation off to fight and die in a war that serves no benefit to the American people, nor justifies the cost of American lives. I pray that you will reflect upon what we are doing in Iran and who we are doing it for. I think that's the important part. The time for bold action is now. You can reverse course and chart a new path for our nation, or you can allow us to slip further towards decline and chaos. You hold the cards. It was an honor to serve in your administration and to serve our great nation. Signed, your name, Joseph Kent. Joe, how does it feel to be here 4 months later or 5 months later? I forget how long it's been. And you've just been vindicated and we're just begging for it to stop, man.
Well, look, I'm not a big fan of saying, well, you know, I called it X, Y, and Z. Sure. I would hope to have been wrong. I hope right. that we wouldn't be here back when I resigned in March. However, even back in March, I didn't see a clear way for us to get out unless, like that last paragraph says, the president takes some really bold and decisive action. And every day that goes on and every tragedy that we suffer taking more casualties, the harder it's going to be for the president to take that bold action. But at the same time, it's going to become more critical that he does so. I've been advocating, you know, since I resigned for him to leave immediately.
Right.
And I've been trying to do so even more in the last, you know, 24, 48 hours since we've tragically taken more casualties, and the Iranians have once again proven that they can probably make this much worse for us. I'm afraid that if the president continues to double down, which it sounds like he's doing, we are going to face a mass casualty event. We have been very, very lucky so far. There's been tragedy, but we still have been lucky. I think the Iranians have the ability to deal us a mass casualty event, and we need to get out before that happens. Otherwise, we're going to be sucked into this thing to the extent that the president won't be able to pull us out.
Wow, that's a pretty stark warning. What might a mass casualty event look like? Is that maybe hitting some of these air bases? I know we have the KC-135s at Ben Gurion Airport, among other things. What are some of the risk factors that you're keeping an eye on right now?
Really, just keep in mind that when we're in the Middle East and we're not on our home turf, the enemy only has to be lucky once, and we have to be lucky every day, every second of the day. And so we can disperse our troops. We can try and move them around. However, the Iranians have good intelligence. It's hard for us to move around some of the systems that we're trying to fight with without that being detected. And so basically, the Iranians have proven time and time again that through their ballistic missiles and through their drones, they can reach out and they can touch us. I am very concerned that President Trump's going to be tempted to do something more decisive and more aggressive to open the Straits of Hormuz as the noose tightens on our economic crisis and energy crisis here,
right,
in terms of potentially him putting boots on the ground. But I am also concerned, you know, about our naval forces. Just think about it. Like, you can look at a map and you can see how far away Iran is from Jordan. It is a pretty good distance. So with those ballistic missiles that they fired that penetrated the air defense of those bases on Jordan that killed our soldiers, there's no reason why they couldn't, if they wanted to, use those same capabilities to take down some of our ships. And again, we have a lot of capabilities to defend against that. But again, that goes back to that same math. The longer that we stay, the more opportunity that we are giving the Iranians to inflict a mass casualty event on us. So we are basically just handing the enemy options by leaving our forces there.
Yeah. And it's basically just this insane idea of, why are we fighting this stupid war? Why are we here in the first place? It just doesn't make it's like you said, like literally months ago, when we first started doing this, even before, declare victory and go home. What is preventing him from doing that in your approximation?
I mean, ultimately, that question is the question of at least this war, if not something much broader. For the life of me, I think the simplest answer right now is pride. President Trump does want he wants a piece of paper from the Iranians that says that he has a deal. He wants to say that he has a deal. He has decisively ended the war, and, you know, he's been victorious. The Iranians are not going to give that to him. We've killed the supreme leader. We have galvanized the Iranian people around the current regime.
Right.
Even some of the more moderate individuals inside of Iran who probably would like to come to a diplomatic agreement with us, they can't come out and say that just because of how galvanized the Iranian people are right now. So this regime currently is not going to give, no matter how many of them that we kill, they're not going to give the administration the piece of paper, the symbolic diplomatic victory that they want. At the same time, and President Trump has said this out loud, the reason why we got into the memorandum of understanding in the first place and accepted the ceasefire in the first place is because we couldn't achieve our victory via military action. And so now we're back to military action.
Right.
The fundamentals haven't changed. The Straits of Hormuz is still the Straits of Hormuz. The Iranian military,
this is the
ballistics.
This is the whole thing. The facts on the ground, not only have they not changed, they've gotten worse. We don't have missile interceptors, and we're going to run out of missiles. Like, what the hell? Like what the hell is
simple
it?
Matt, I mean, really,
go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know what the exact math problem is, but the Iranians probably don't know what the exact math problem is, but they do know that they can lob stuff at us longer than we can shoot stuff down.
Right.
Or they can lob enough stuff at us on any one location. This is what I think they've shown. They've shown that they can reach out and they can touch us basically wherever. And the message we should be receiving from that is that the more surface exposure we have, and I mean surface in terms of like our naval ships within range, but then also our bases within range, the more we're increasing the odds that we get hit, we suffer more casualties, we potentially suffer a mass casualty event. And then we all know President Trump's not going to be able to pull us out after a mass casualty event. I think right now that we've taken some more casualties, the Iranians have proven they have this capability. In the last 48 hours, we've done two, and I think CENTCOM just announced a third round of strikes. We have gotten our reprisal. We can say that we got our reprisal. And now I think is the time for President Trump to say, you know what? I took out their Navy. I took out their military. He's got the talking points down. He says them every time. Say that. get our guys out of there, and he can still probably convince a good deal of people here in the United States that we are successful. And then we can engage in quiet diplomacy to get the Straits of Hormuz back open up again. I pray he does that. And if he does do that, I will give him immense credit, and we should all be grateful if he does that. However, I am concerned that because he wants this piece of paper, or he wants a military victory, and he keeps going back to the military, because like right now, you know, our diplomats, even on their best day, they're just not going to get a deal. And so he's going to the military and he's saying, what options do I have? And CENTCOM's probably saying like, well, we're kind of running out of stuff to bomb and to see an effect. And they're probably having to tell him all the different contingencies that we have for ground operations right now. And that is a mass. I'm sure he's getting warned. I hope he's getting warned, but that is that's a trap. Because if we get sucked into that, I fear the worst. Mass casualties, but then also the Iranians letting us come in and actually take an island or take, you know, the port at Mandar Abbas, but then isolating our troops via ballistics and drones to essentially have hostages without ever having to actually physically put their hands on American soldiers.
Right. It seems like all the troops in the region are hostages to me. And that's the whole prospect of fighting a war. We can't defend our own people. That really rings hollow. And I think that promise is really pissing people off, myself included, and the vast majority of Americans. I do have to say, I think it's 70% don't support this war. My question to you is this, because I saw people talking about it and you talking about it over the weekend, talking about retaliating and then leaving. Doesn't that perpetuate itself as kind of like an escalation trap type of thing? Like, what do you view the response being? Like, what is proportionality? What does that mean?
Well, look, if our guys are under fire, we have to return fire immediately. So a lot of the debate is kind of semantic. I know people got mad, sure, when I said, like, we have to respond. Like, when we're under fire, we're going to shoot back. That's not like a moral dilemma. Like, that's what you do.
Right.
That's why you shouldn't put yourself in these situations. That's why I was against the war. That's why I resigned. That's why these wars in the Middle East have been foolish, and so has been our basing arrangement.
No, I wanted to talk about that a little bit, because the purity testing stuff is a bit retarded. Right. And here's the thing, you have a lot of life experience that a lot of people don't have, and they can disagree with your position or whatever, but we need capable people. We need people that are going to be there in the years to come for this political movement, for whatever America First truly ends up meaning. We need people like you. We need people like my dad. We need a lot of other people that have been persecuted and hounded. And I know, Joe, it's a very common experience to have to deal with like a created image that the mainstream media might create of you. Right. And then you're like, actually, no, I'm Joe Kent. I'm Alex Jones. I'm this guy. Right. I'm not what this article says about me. But from the perspective of people that are very like, we're all, myself included, we're all desperate right now for this to stop. And we're desperate for really the military, not the military, but the people in charge to be held to account for what they've done to our troops and our citizens. And I think that there's a growing anger and outrage. What is the runway before it is truly, and I think it's already for me, I'll never support him again. What is truly the end of the runway for Trump? In your approximation, how much longer does he have?
He's running out as we speak right now. I mean, because again, like, if the enemy gets lucky while you and I are having this conversation,
sure,
with a mass casualty event, then we're not going to be able to leave. And then we're going to be back in it. We suffered those three losses this weekend. We've done three iterations of strikes. I don't even think we needed to do three. I think we needed to just send back a volley at the military locations that launched those cruise missiles as we were leaving. It's covering fire basically in the military while you retreat. You're still shooting the bad guys to keep their heads down. That's what we should have done here in this instance. We don't need to stay forever and leave our guys vulnerable too. Because then, like you said, yes, then it will become an escalation trap. We've definitely we've blown up enough of their stuff. We've gotten vengeance for the individuals that they've killed. This is the time for President Trump to end this. He still right now has the ability to end this, because the next cruise missile, the next drone, whatever the case might be, maybe it's not going to kill. I don't want it to kill one more American. I don't want it to give one more American
absolutely
a hangnail. However, it could be catastrophic. It could be hitting, you know, one of the ships, or it could be hitting a base. You know, there's only so many places we can put people. I mean, it could be a mass casualty event. And then again, then we're going to be locked into this thing. Right now, he can say enough is enough. We've won. And I think he still has the ability, as long as he gets our guys out and we don't suffer any more losses, he does have the ability to continue to signal back here at home that he won. And, you know, the people who are against President Trump can say that, you know, that's not true. We didn't win. But at the end of the day, he'll still be able to shape the narrative.
I think you said it originally that when we just leave, what we should do is just declare victory and go home. They have no reason. And really, they have an anti-reason. They're in trouble if they keep the strait closed, because then they're hated. right? It makes no sense for them to do that, right?
Yeah.
So just from like a perspective, you think about like Sun Tzu, Art of War, just like the best way to fight is not to fight, right? Is to not have to have that battle. So we can just leave and not only protect our people, protect the financial assets of the country as well, because our global financial system is coming apart over this. And that's a whole nother topic I want to get to in the next segment. Really, World War III, economic war, Russia, Ukraine, more of the Iran war, the Houthis closing the strait. We're going to get into all of it and more. I do want to plug really quick because they tell me to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Joe, we got to get you some merch. Whatever you want, you'll get it for free. TheAlexJonesStore.com. We got amazing water filtration as well. I'm super excited to tell people about that. We got the phenomenal supplements, the power plant, the methylene blue, methylene red, methyl drive, you name it, MK, all the other things that we have available for you at TheAlexJonesStore.com. I really like the Freedom 250 collection and everything else that we have available. And I do want to tell you guys, I am live every single morning, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., New American Journal in the morning. I got to get you on the morning show as well. But with that being said, with that plug being done, I want to get into this. Matt Bracken, who's another operator like yourself, he's a Navy SEAL. He has this phenomenal graphic. It's all one energy world war. This is kind of a prelude to the next segment. Can we go ahead and throw that up, guys? It's time to realize that we are in an energy world war. Look at this here. It's only 500 kilometers from the Russia-Ukraine conflict zone to the USA-Iran conflict zone. The combined war zone stretches 8,000 kilometers for freedom units, burger units. That's like around like 4,000 miles. NATO countries are supplying Ukraine with deep strike weapons to attack Russia. If you include Ukrainian strikes against Russia in the Caspian Sea, this is between the conflict zones shrinks to only 500 kilometers. Joe, what do you see as just the future, where we're headed here? It seems pretty bleak.
It's incredibly bleak. And look, this is another reason why Trump needs to end this thing immediately. I mean, just this morning, we had an announcement from the Houthis that potentially they're going to shut down the Bab al-Mandeb, basically the gateway to the Mediterranean into the Suez, that the Saudis have been using to circumvent a lot of the troubles that are taking place in the Straits of Hormuz because of this war. Now, that's not confirmed. It hasn't happened yet, as far as I know. But if that does happen, we are going to be in dire straits. And then everything that's taking place in Ukraine, in Russia, this is yet another war that we should have gotten out of quite some time ago. We never should have gotten into it in the first place. But I mean, Matt does a great job of laying it out there on that map. Like, all of these events that we don't think are interconnected are deeply, deeply interconnected. Now, we won't feel it as immediately here in America as the rest of the world, as Europe and Asia will. But if we don't start getting serious about making sure at least these choke points are open back up again and like the kinetic war stops, then we are going to be in a very, very bad way. Look, I think the Russia-Ukraine thing that's kind of out of Trump's hands. I don't know how much he could do short of I think Russia believes that they're winning right now and Ukraine could continue to fight for a little bit. I think we should choke off a lot of the money and the funding and the weapons that we're giving them as well. But what's taking place in the Gulf, the Straits of Hormuz, Bab al-Mandeb, President Trump can't control a lot of that. If we end this war right now and we incentivize through sanctions relief the Iranians to open back up the Straits of Hormuz, we can at least blunt or buy us some more time in the coming energy crisis. But if this war stays hot and the Iranians continue to choke off the Straits and potentially even the Bab al-Mandeb, we are heading towards an economic disaster, probably starting in, I don't know, the fall, the winter timeframe is what most oil experts are saying.
Wow. We're going to come right back to that. We're going to talk about the Yanbu pipeline. We're going to talk about the Saudis. We're going to talk about Yemen and so much more. Joe Kent, stay with me right here after this break.
Microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix. Graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. It the revolution's already here is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Colin saying 21 years ago that, oh yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha ha ha, wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away, not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more, scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health. What it's done is absolutely insane. Get Masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatically when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back to the program. Second hour here with Joe Kent. We're talking about all things geopolitical right now, talking about Ukraine, Russia, and of course the U.S.-Iran war going on right now, talking about Yemen, Saudi Arabia, the Yanbu pipeline, where of course 5.2 million barrels of crude go through every single day, I believe. That's about to be prospectively shut down. So Joe, what can you tell us? What do you know about the situation between Yemen, Saudi Arabia, and what we're potentially facing right now, not just with the Strait of Hormuz, but with the Bab el-Mandeb?
Yeah, the Houthis, if people remember, I mean, things move so fast, it's easy to forget that we fought the Houthis last year. Essentially, we launched Operation Rough Rider in an attempt to stop the Houthis from basically choking off a lot of the supply lanes on the Bab el-Mandeb. we were unable to militarily defeat the Houthis. We dealt them some blows, but for people who don't know, it's easy to forget this just looking at a map. Yemen is very mountainous. That western coast of Yemen is ideal for having the high ground, having intricate series of caves where you can defend airspace and where you can also rain down missiles on basically the Red Sea and the Bab al-Mandeb. The Houthis used terrain. They used a lot of the technology that the Iranians had given them very, very effectively. Eventually, we were able to the Houthis stopped and they reopened up the shipping lanes. They said that they still reserved the right to strike Israel based on what was taking place in Gaza, but they've remained relatively quiet during this war. So it was always a calculation of at what point in time would the Houthis get involved. Now, the Saudis decided to bomb Sana'a International Airport as the Houthi delegation tried to return from Iran from the former supreme leader's funeral. I don't believe that the Saudis would have done that to provoke the Houthis if they didn't have intelligence telling them that the Houthis were going to get back into the fight and do things more decisively. I could be wrong. That's just my read. I don't think the Saudis were looking to open up a new front in the war. So I took their actions as that they probably had some kind of indicators that said that the Houthis were about ready to get involved. Now, again, just to show how durable the control of that airspace has been, the Saudis, they were able to bomb Sana'a, but they weren't able to stop the Houthi delegation from going to an alternate airport closer to the coast, just showing how strong their grip is on that coastline of the Red Sea. So the delegation was able to land there. So if the Houthis do this and they're able to shut down or even just slow down the traffic, because the Houthis basically just said they're going to stop the Saudis from being able to use the Red Sea and the Bab al-Mandeb, which basically negates that Yanu pipeline that you talked about. The Yanu pipeline just basically cuts across Saudi Arabia, and as opposed to going at the Straits of Hormuz, it cuts to the west and dumps out in the Red Sea. And so then it either goes south to Asia or it goes up north through the Suez into the Med. So again, this would be a major issue even if it was happening in an isolated incident. That's kind of why we had to launch Operation Rough Rider. But now that we have the Straits of Hormuz under the grip of the Iranians, this is a complete game changer, because if these two entities, the Houthis and the Iranians, start working in coordination to choke off global energy supplies, again, it's yet another reason. It's just yet another factor. It's like, if we couldn't beat the Houthis militarily last year when this is all we had to worry about,
right,
and now we haven't been able to beat the Iranians, like a world doesn't exist where we can beat both simultaneously.
No, 100%. And that just makes sense because it's basic math. If we couldn't do it back then when we had like basically infinitely more supplies than we have now wasted, like how are we expected to get that job done? And I think it's kind of crazy to think about. What happens then? Kind of just like, of course, not asking you to do a prediction or anything, just in your estimation, who has to fight these people if this is going to expand or escalate in this direction?
In theory, it would have to be us. I mean, we can kind of like lie to ourselves and say it's going to be the Saudis, and maybe the Saudis would be able to do a decent amount, but they wouldn't be able to make significant progress without the Houthis. But then we would have to pull a lot of resources away from what we're doing in the Straits of Hormuz. And so then it becomes a whack-a-mole game. And at any given time, they could shut down one or both Bab al-Mandeb, Straits of Hormuz. So again, like this is sort of like where we were before the MOU. Like there's no military solution. And now there's like even less of a military solution because we're talking about a whole separate front that we already haven't been able to tackle, you know, once before opening back up. This is why I really hope that President Trump like stops listening to all the hype and all the happy talk that he's getting about how we're just going to keep kicking butt and taking names. And he realizes that the strongest hand for him to play right now is just to walk away.
Well, here's the thing. You're like psychic or something. You're throwing shade at the future clip that I'm going to play. Joe, here's the thing. What do you know? What experience do you have? I've got a guy named Mark Levin, and he knows a lot. I want to go ahead and play this because here's the thing. We do good shows. We try to present good information. We want the president to get us out of this war. He's listening to the other side. Go ahead and roll Mark Levin.
Populism. Populism undermines republicanism. Populism is the mob. The mob. Historically, it's been the mob. Oh, I'm a populist. No. We are little R Republicans. That's what we believe in.
Oh, he's so funny, man.
And then there's anti-Semitism. The Marxists, the Islamists, and the neo-fascists woke right.
Ooh.
They're all supporting Jew hatred. They
not true.
All trash Israel. It is on a constant, relentless basis now. Of all the countries in the world, little tiny Israel is relentlessly attacked.
Pause it. Whoa, little tiny Israel is always starting these massive, like, regional wars and crazy conflicts. It's basically the entire history. So the reason I just want to point this out, I want to see what your perspective is. Mark, the reason why people are upset with Israel is because we keep having to fight these wars that we have nothing to do with. Joe, what's your take on that?
I mean, it's not even good gaslighting at this point.
No.
I mean, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, I guess this would have been effective. But I mean, Levin is just grasping at straws here, because you don't even have to be deeply steeped in the region just to understand that Israel drug us into this war, and that Israel has basically been dictating our policy in the Middle East now since at least the post 9/11 era. I think most Americans just pretty much accept that. So I don't even think this little act that he's doing has very much purchase anymore. But as you said, unfortunately, you know, the president does still tell us that he watches Mark Levin.
Right.
So for whatever reason, this is some of the advice that he's getting. And as comical as I can't even take, I just think he's, I think it's hilarious. I just learned today with this clip that those lapel pins he has are actually not a meme. That's what I was laughing about. I thought that was a meme. I didn't know they were actually like that big.
Really quick. That's a whole thing.
Yeah,
Joe.
No, I was just going to he's all he's doing is the same. It's the tired game. It doesn't work anymore. Like nobody cares what religion they practice in Israel. We care that our government is pursuing the strategic objectives for Israel at our behest. We are fighting, we are dying, we are bleeding, and in the long run, we will suffer the most from it. That's what the fundamental issue is. And I'm happy to argue that with him. I went on a show and argued it. And I think most Americans just understand that. So this is just desperation.
Yeah, it's my personal theory that he's got like a, you know, like people have like chess sets that are ornate and whatever. He's got pins that are like an inch and a half smaller, inch and a half bigger, you know, metallic, glossy, matte. Like he's got, he messes with you subliminally. It's a great technique to keep people engaged with your show, because a tackle box is what the crew is saying, a tackle box. But it's sad. It's really not funny. It's actually kind of sad, because the people with the least experience, they get listened to the most, it seems. And it's just kind of this like experiential gap. We see people around President Trump that I just don't think have the context to give him information so that he can make the right decisions. And then the people that he's involved with, they're going to push him towards perpetuating these conflicts. Joe, in your estimation, is there anybody around him that gives him good advice right now? Is there anybody?
I hope he's listening to the vice president. I mean, when we hear the vice president come out and talk about this war, it's very sober. It's very clear eyed. You know, he was on the Joe Rogan podcast talking about the influence that Israel has in our media and how the role that's played in this war. He's much more measured than I have been. However, he's got a very clear vision, you know, of what's taking place here. So I don't know what choice the president's going to make at the end of the day. Like I think we've all granted President Trump a lot of grace about like, oh, he got bad advice or the deep state slow rolling him, et cetera. But like, he's got the maximum agency right now, and no one can make a bold move like President Trump. And he needs to make a bold move right now. Like he has got to stick his head up and realize just where we're at. I still believe that one of President Trump's like strongest characteristics is that he can look at macro, like large scale data, like you've been putting up with those maps, where that leverage is in the energy sector and the ramifications that we'll have, and that he can still make really big decisions really quickly. I just don't believe that he doesn't understand all this. So I am still puzzled as to why he hasn't just said, okay, Mr. Vice President, why don't you call some shots right now? Or him just come out and be like, we won, we're leaving, and I'm going to fire everybody who told me this was going to be a good idea. This was a good idea.
I lean towards a hostage scenario. I think there's some co-option and some control that's taken place. Like, we're aware of information operations and intelligence and the various things that you can do. And human beings are human beings. Nobody is God except for Jesus Christ, of course. We all put on our pants one leg at a time. I think people oftentimes get confused on this, and they project kind of like their parasocial relationship onto like who they want the person to be. In reality, maybe it was never fair to ask somebody to do everything they promised to do in running for office. And then you have to look at our entire political system and go, damn, is this what we are? So Joe, in just 2028, 2032, moving forward, what do you think the long-term implications of this war are going to be for the American people when they go to the polls next time? Because we hear a lot about election integrity, voter fraud, XYZ, all these things that are very important. But ultimately, Americans just don't, there's no, you vote for Biden, vote for Trump, you get war. It doesn't seem like there's a way out of this. What's your take on that?
I agree. And I think there's a lot of issues with our elections. I come from a state that's been doing mail-in voting and machine tabulation for decades now. So I think that's a huge problem. However, you're right. People, especially the base, the people who came out 77 million strong, who came out for Trump to bring that coalition back together, a lot of them are going to be saying, like, I thought, you know, I came out here and I voted, I took a chance, and I got the exact same thing that I was, you know, voting against. And so we're going to have a hard case to make on the populist right in 2028 if we're kind of rolling out just the same slogans and a lot of the same people.
Right.
We're going to have to present, you know, we're going to have to present people that actually have a track record of speaking out, of standing up, and of doing the right thing when there was no incentives to do so. And then we're also going to have to be able to articulate what our vision for the future is, how we're going to keep ourselves out of getting in these endless wars, how we're going to actually start putting America first. And I think a lot of that from the position of, you know, the commander in chief for the presidency is really being able to articulate what our foreign policy is, what we see America's role as being, how we're going to start retracting the so-called American empire that's never benefited the American people. Because the longer that we try and cling on to this empire and say that we're the indispensable nation in every single region of the world, we're the protectors of the Straits of Hormuz, the longer we try and hold on to this, the more our nation is going to suffer. The next president, and I think really for the rest of President Trump's presidency as well, the choice that we have to make is, are we going to save our republic, or we're going to try and cling on to our empire? Because you can't do both. And I think basically the last 20 years have proven that, have gotten us to this point. So in 28, I do believe that we can build a populist political coalition on this idea that we don't have to agree on every single issue. We might not agree on like how to do healthcare. We might not agree on social issues. But as long as we can all agree that whoever sits in the White House next, they're not going to take marching orders from a foreign lobby. They're not going to get us involved in any more wars unless they can, you know, in very, very plain terms, define what the vital national security interest is and how America is threatened and what our plan is for executing and what our conditions are for saying mission success, we're done. And then how we're going to, again, retract this empire and focus on actually putting the American people first. That's going to be key in 2028. I am worried, though, that we're not going to be able to, you know, motivate the base to come back together and rally around this. And I think if we have a disenfranchisement scenario where a lot of young people don't come out and vote, or they opt to vote for Mondamis and right, for a lot of the, you know, more socialist leaning populists, we could be, you know, we could be in for some very, very dark days, because the solution to all this nonsense isn't socialism, for God's sakes.
Right.
We know what the solution is. We know what the formula is. We've just got to convince people that we're actually going to execute on it. We've got to reject the foreign funding, the foreign money, and then more foreign entanglements.
No, it's literally you have a layup, the court is wide open, and then you throw the ball in the coach's face and break their nose. Like that's the best analogy that I can give for all this. We want economic recovery. What that means is literally in the slogan, America first, domestic above foreign, protecting ourselves instead of this bizarre fetish for projecting power. And of course, Washington warned about beware foreign entanglements, right? Like, let's just think about this for a second. The foreign entanglement, just foreign engagement in general, when it's unnecessary, that benefits the other nations because there's a grift there. They can grab on and take a little piece of us every single time we engage in that, and they puff us up. Oh, you're important. You're so vital to the world order. You're the world policeman, XYZ. All the while we're getting fleeced and they're picking our pocket, whether that's Europe, Ukraine, Israel. It's kind of this universal picture of us having the weakest allies around that literally rely on us to be their defense system. And I'm not dying for any country besides my own. And that's, I will die on that. They are not going to take me to go die in Ukraine or Iran. I need to have children, right? And you tell young people like me that, you know, you're not patriotic if you don't support the war. This is the last thing I wanted to ask you. I want to ask you about this. I wrote it down. What do you say about people that say these soldiers signed up to die in this war and that you're not allowed to criticize it, and that in fact, criticizing it is disrespectful to them? Isn't that outrageous and obscene?
Yeah, that's actually very disrespectful. I mean, look, anybody who joins the military, they do it because they're patriotic and they do it because they love their country.
Right.
But there is also, because it's an all-volunteer force, we are not conscripting people to join our military. Yes. And the underpinning of the all-volunteer force is a social contract. It is trust. It is the men and women of our armed forces volunteering to lay down their lives for our nation because they trust our leaders. They have to trust that our leaders are only going to deploy them and send them into harm's way to defend the United States of America for a vital national security interest. When I went off to war, it was after 9/11, and I thought we were going to, you know, beat back the terrorists and defend our nation. It turned out we were lied to. In this one, in this Iran war, the commander in chief didn't even attempt to sell this war or explain why we were executing this war to the American people. And now we are continuing to take casualties. Both these individuals we tragically just lost the other day,
yes,
were either not born or babies during 9/11. I think that the young lady there was 19 years old. She wasn't even born when the attacks of September 11th happened.
Right.
So the fact that these individuals are over there and we don't have a vital national security interest, it is actually now our patriotic duty as citizens, because these young soldiers came from our ranks, they came from our citizenry, and they went forward ostensibly to defend us. It is now our responsibility to hold our leaders accountable because our leaders have broken that social contract. If right. we don't have this social contract and this social contract isn't upheld by our leadership, then the entire system is going to start to crumble and it's going to start to fray. And this is one of the dangers, I believe, of having an all-volunteer force. I have many mixed feelings about this, but I proudly served as a volunteer. I served in special forces. So I served with like the volunteers of the volunteers.
Right.
However, the all-volunteer military has given our elected officials the ability to separate war and the pain and the loss of war from the vast majority of the American citizenry. This has allowed them to keep us at war for 20 plus years in the global war on terror. It's allowed them to send us off to this war in Iran without explaining it to the American people. If there had to be a draft right now, there is no way this war would have gotten off the ground. The draft is why the Vietnam War ended when it did. So I do think we have a lot of hard decisions to make. I'm not saying I'm in favor of a draft by any means. However, because the social contract between our leaders and our citizenry is being broken in these needless, senseless wars and with needless, senseless deaths, it is our patriotic duty to question it. We honor the blood of our fallen by holding our leaders accountable for needless deaths and foolish wars like this.
Yeah, and strong points for sure. And that's the thing, is people, they'll say, oh, well, you're not being patriotic if you don't support these military actions. I just say, hey, man, I'm just thinking about all the people that signed up for the peace president. They got blown up. You know, I think a lot of people are thinking about that right now. It's very somber and harrowing to think about this stuff, much less I can't even imagine being over there having to actually deal with it. And, you know, I'd like to live in a country that is actually what it says it is, you know, land of the free, the home of the brave. And maybe we were free and we were brave at a certain point, but I think we've been co-opted through ignorance. And the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Another way to say that is ignorance. And I think what you're speaking to here, it reminds me of the Otto von Bismarck quote, or von Bismarck quote, America has weak neighbors to its north and south and fish to its east and west. So it's not only the all-volunteer military, it's also the uniqueness of the American experiment and us really creating that modern world that has allowed for us to really have that decentralized, like, network approach to the planet. And now I think other nations have caught up to that as well. And our old tricks, our old methods that maybe worked in the 20th century don't work so well anymore. And I think it's key what you say. We can either choose to have the American Empire or the American Republic. And I think that we all would support the latter. Thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Always great to be with you, man.
100%. I'll see you soon. You got to come on the morning show. I'll see you soon.
Love to.
Badass. See you soon. Thank you. Thank you so much. That was Joe Kent and another phenomenal interview. We're going to get the clips out. Really important stuff. Please share the live link, the live feed. I do need to plug. Just go ahead and pull up the Power Drive bundle. Okay. I created these products. We got the methylene blue. We got the CoQ10, the PQQ, the magnesium, the methylated vitamin B12, the Rhodiola roja golden root, the cordyceps mushroom extract to increase ATP and oxygen carrying capacity. We've got the boron. We've got the zinc. We've got the selenium. We've got the black pepper and so much more. All of that is found together in the Power Drive bundle. I made these two products specifically to enhance the effects of methylene blue. Ultimate Methyl Drive is so incredible because it, number one, contains CoQ10, which is something that aids in the electron transport chain of the mitochondria, and it has the PQQ, which enhances that mitochondrial biogenesis, the fusing and also creation of new mitochondria as well. They got their own DNA, remember that. Combined with the Ultra Methylene Blue, which is a redox active molecule, very powerful, speeds you through the Krebs cycle, make more energy in a more clean way, combined with the Power Plant, the ultimate, the new version, I call it Super Male Vitality 2.0. It's a different formula, works in a different way. Basically, enhance physical exercise by taking cordyceps mushroom, breathe better, work out harder, train better. Take the Rhodiola roja, increases dopamine and norepinephrine in the brain a little bit, modulates those two things, going to make your workouts feel better. Take the boron, take the zinc, take the selenium, raise your enzymatic processes throughout the body, raise your testosterone, free testosterone in my approximation. Those aren't claims, just look it up. Google Scholar, PubMed, they'll all tell you the same thing. These are really powerful metabolic ingredients and supplements that have the potential to change your life. Of course, I'm not a doctor or medical professional, but look into all these things and ask yours. Say, hey, this supplement's got CoQ10 and PQQ, magnesium and methylated vitamin B12 in it. I can't absorb vitamin B12 too good. I need to take a supplement. Doctor might even tell you to take it if you ask him about it. So go ahead and take, buy, get it as a gift, the Power Drive bundle for you or a loved one today. We've just got the methylene blue. We got the methylene red. We got methylene blue capsule. We got the beef tallow products as well, which are really cool. We've also got, I want to tell you guys about this, the colostrum. And I have been eating the gummies and I have been feeling great. I think it's a little too far gone for my hair, though. I don't think I'll be regrowing any luscious locks anytime soon. Although here's the thing, I will do the Dr. Phil later on in the year, because I'm going to do the Mark Levin for Halloween. Okay, I'm going to do the Mark Levin for Halloween. Tim Dillon did the Meghan McCain. That's a classic. It kind of blew up off that, to be honest. I'm going to method act, and I'm going to live as Mark Levin for 24 hours. I'm going to film the whole thing. So that's going to be really fun. That'll be coming up in October. But I do just want to tell you, look at it. Hamas and Hezbollah. We actually just had Joe Kent on the show. I'm not a big fan of Joe Kent. What did he ever do? Serve in the military? I have a radio show where I talk to Trump and I work for Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm a lot cooler guy. I'm Mark Levin. Let me tell you right now, Hamas and Hezbollah are not going to defeat us, buddy. They're not going to defeat us. No matter, we'll fight to the last American. All right, so I haven't been watching him recently, so the impression is starting to go. It's a little bit deeper. It's Hamas and Hezbollah. All right, that's okay. I did want to get to this. I'll review it really quick. Got 1 minute left. The Supreme Leader, Mojtaba, the new Khomeini, we replaced Khomeini with Khomeini, remember that? He rejected a meeting with Iraqi Prime Minister Ali al-Zadi. Ali al-Zadi was just at the White House. That definitely smells like a failed assassination attempt from me, to me from UNC. There he is. So draw. Hold on. Keep the camera there. We're going to go down. And then he's got a little tail. He's got goatee. And he's got the pitchfork. I will see you all soon. In the next hour, I'm taking your calls. Stay tuned. Get ready.
It's here. Bring it into the docking bay. Stack them all in my chambers at once. I now have all the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter shower heads from the Alex Jones store.
Ha 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 ha! There's something about this water I feel kind of funny. Hey, do you want to hang out tonight?
These stormtroopers are not warriors. They are vessels. We keep them full of chemicals to keep them under control. Like the dark side itself, it dulls the mind. It fractures the will.
Drink your water, troopers. I am sending you to the desert planet of Tatooine. We must crush the rebel force.
Dude, I think I'm gay. Me too. Let's go back to the ship and cuddle. I thought you'd never ask.
Turn around now and get back out there. These are your orders.
They're turning the frogs gay. Don't let them turn you next. Ha ha ha. You have to admit that Alex Jones is funny.
AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.